Good morning. It is 10:16, Wednesday, June 3rd. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News, and this might be the last week of the lockdown locks. New York City is opening up next Monday.
I am Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent with the Thoroughbred Daily News. Isn't it amazing to think that this Saturday would have been the running of the Belmont Stakes under normal times, ending up the Triple Crown? We haven't even started the Triple Crown yet.
John Green, general manager of DJ Stable, and I am just so thankful that all these racetracks are opening and that we have more racing other than poor recently completed Fauner. Thank you, Naira. Thank you to all the other racing jurisdictions that worked hard to get racing up and running. And we are just all really blessed that everyone's healthy and that racing is in full force and on the back cover of today's New York Post.
Which was good for them. Good to see that. I'm Alan Carrasso, managing editor of the TDN, and great to be on with you guys. Looking forward to a good show.
So we'll start with John's very heartfelt appreciation of Belmont Park. I feel it even more, you know, as a born and raised New Yorker. It's been a really scary time for the last couple of months, and still is a scary time for some different reasons now. But in terms of the racing world, I think the return of Belmont completes the return to normalcy. I know there are still a couple of tracks here and there that aren't running. Parks comes to mind. But, you know, Belmont is, to me, the crown jewel of racing outside of Saratoga. And it's just, it has its own feel. It has its own different feel from the rest of the New York tracks, from the rest of America's tracks. And it doesn't feel like spring in New York for me without Belmont running. So, like John said, we're super grateful for all the work behind the scenes that got us to this point. Today's opening day. It looks like it might rain, which is unfortunate because there's a really nice turf race. There's the Bogue. It's only six horses, but there's a lot of nice horses in there. And it's just going to be an action-packed meet because they had to truncate it down to 25 days, still running most of the stakes they would have run normally. This Saturday, we've got the Carter. We've got the Westchester. We're going to talk to Suge McGahey a little later, where Code of Honor is going to make his seasonal debut in the Westchester. But, you know, we get criticized a little bit sometimes for being too America-centric. So I want to include the French classics that were run this week at Dovey with the 1,000 guineas and the 2,000 guineas. Some pretty nice races. It was cool, actually, I thought, to hear like the jockeys whooping it up with no fans. I think that's really interesting. And that's something that could be cool and could be a bright side of sports returning without fans, is you get to hear more of the player interaction, you get hear more of the exaltation from the athletes. I think that's pretty cool. So I wanted to give a pop to France for getting back racing and really starting the Euro resurgence of racing this summer. And just wanted to open it up to you guys. We're going to talk specifically about some races that are coming up this week, but about Belmont opening up and getting back to normal in racing and how privileged we are to do it.
Yeah, I mean, Joe, well said. It's great to see Belmont back. And I look at it also as the bigger picture. And we've got all the major racetracks, the big ones in California, of course, Santa Anita, Churchill Downs in Kentucky, and Belmont in New York, and Gulfstream as well this time of year. There is really, now with Belmont coming back, you have all the major racetracks back. Best of my knowledge, the only place in the country that has not yet given the green light for racing to resume is Pennsylvania. A lot of problems going on there, but it looks like they're going to come along within a week or two as well. So, you know, there's so much more of a sense of normalcy now. The one thing, though, it's, you know, we're kind of taking for granted the whole idea of let's get back to racing without fans, because that's what everybody wanted and everybody knew that that's the best we could do. So now that we've gotten through this step, let's hope now that we can go to what would be a giant step forward to get fans back into the stands. Looks like it's not going to happen for either Saratoga or Del Mar, the two meets in the country that rely more on track attendance than really anything else, which is a shame. So hopefully in the fall, maybe at Santa Anita, the fall of Belmont, we can get fans back into the stands and we can have racing 100% back to normal.
Yeah, it's just so wonderful that we have all these racing jurisdictions that are racing. And I think, Joe, you may have mentioned it in last week's podcast, but it's so nice. It's such a breath of fresh air that all these racing jurisdictions and factions amongst our industry are working together. And whether it's the tracks that host the Triple Crown races that kind of work together to try to fashion together a Triple Crown racing circuit, or even more surprising, the various sales companies that are working together, whether it's OBS, Phasic, Tipton, and of course our sponsor Keeneland, that are working together to work out dates and work out logistics. It's just so nice because I remember the first couple of shows that we did together almost a year ago, and it was so frustrating to have all of these splinter groups that were really just looking after their own fiefdoms and their own territory. And people have woken up and said, we need to, and it took a pandemic to do it basically, but they've woken up and said, we need to work together. And even though we may be Hatfields and the McCoys for you know 90% of the year, for this time and in this stress test, we have to get our acts together and work together to make the industry better. And that, in a nutshell, has been a great silver lining of all of this, you know, just the pandemic and all the worry and illness and nervousness, is that the industry is actually starting to galvanize a little bit. And we can take pot shots at, yeah, well, they're not doing this right. And there's still trainers that are cheating the system. And there's still, you know, this and that and all the other issues that are still there. But at least we're all kind of going in that positive direction. Because, you know, no offense, but when was the last time we heard PETA have an issue with us? Or when was the last time that we had the FBI come in? And it's sad that we have to use those as our benchmarks that, hey, we haven't had a protest in a while. So that's a good thing. But it really, I'm re-energized about the way that the industry is getting together and trying to salvage and move forward and even make better the products that we have. So, you know, again, a tip, I know I'm here and I go on a soapbox every now and then and say, why didn't they do this? Or how come this isn't working? It looks like we're going in the right direction. And I'm really proud to be part of the industry in this day and age.
You'd need a pretty big soapbox to get to the Monomoy girl level, you know.
Thanks, Alan.
That one's in storage. He has to keep that one in storage.
We'll allow you the soapbox once a month.
There you go.
I'm obviously thrilled to see Belmont back, and you know, do hope the rains stay away to see a rushing Paul got stormy matchup in the Bogey. I guess I'm just happy to have it back, and I don't get to go out to racetracks very often anymore for a variety of reasons, but this is kind of simplistic, but they just ran the Japanese Derby this weekend. Sorry, I knew it was going to have to get squeezed in somehow. But usually there are 190,000 people that pack into Tokyo race course for that race. The noise is deafening as the horses are loading in the gate. They ran that race this weekend in front of zero fans. And they've kept racing in Japan. It's another issue altogether. So, I mean, we can do it. It's, you know, like everything associated with the pandemic, in my mind, everything is a short-term inconvenience. We do this now for the sustenance of the game. We sort of bite the bullet and do what we have to do. And the doors will open, you know, not this year, then next year. And everybody will be okay. So. Just great to have it back. And like you said, Joe, French Classics were run earlier this week. Got the English Classics coming up this weekend, or the Guineas this weekend. So things are getting back into full swing.
And we're going to touch on that a little bit. Just to the point about not having fans, I'm going to put on my epidemiologist hat real quick. I'm sure I'll get angry emails from actual doctors, but it seems to me like the main issue in terms of transmission is indoors. There's not as many outdoor transmission cases. So I think there is maybe a possibility in terms of like baseball games or something like that, some kind of outdoor event where you can let in 25% capacity and force things and have like sanitizing stations and all that stuff. I think that that's at least a potential possibility down the road. But yeah, like I agree with Al that it's just, if not, it's just something we're going to have to suck up and deal with for the rest of this year. I mean, in the fall, people were talking about a resurgence, a second wave. So I wouldn't bank on having fans then either. But, you know, the main thing is that we have the product. We have the product when a lot of other sports do not have the basic product for people to watch and wager on and enjoy and be entertained by. So I think that part is just, it's a lifeblood. It's a lifeline rather to all of us in the sport, whether you're a better owner, trainer, whatever, it's a lifeline to really just, you know, get some sense of normalcy, get some money in your pocket and just get kind of a return to life pre-coronavirus, because I think that's what everybody wants. And it's been a tough couple months. It's seemed like endless. It seems like it's been years since I can't forget that podcast that we had where we were talking about the indictments and everything, and we were also jazzed up and amped up, and then we come out of the room and then like an hour later the NBA cancels its season and just everything went to the trash heap after that. And it just, I don't know, it's funny. I mean, it's not funny, but it's scary how the world can change like in a blink of an eye. And we talked about that at the time, but also want to salute to all you guys for sticking it out with me on the podcast, everybody who works on the podcast, because it's been a little challenging some weeks to you know, scrounge up topics and find stuff to talk about. You know, we can always make fun of John and John being rich, but you know, you can't do that for a straight hour. You know, you really have to have some substance. So shout out to you guys for sticking it out. I think it's only going to get easier from here. I wanted to transition from that into what's going on this weekend, because this is a monster weekend of racing on both sides of the pond. Just to touch on a few, we talked about Belmont. You got the Carter and the Westchester. Carter's a Breeders' Cup winning your in race for the sprint. You have the Santa Anita Derby, the Santa Anita Oaks. You can see Authentic and Honor AP clash in the Santa Anita Derby in the Oaks. We should have a rematch of Gamine and Speech, which would they threw down in that Oaklawn allowance. And you know, back at home at Santa Anita, they should be only even better than that. And like Al mentioned, the English Classics over the weekend, horse that really broke through to me and who I think was the best, I'm not going out on a limb here, but I think was the best two-year-old in the world last year, was Pinatubo. And he went 6 for 6 as a two-year-old, was absolutely devastating in his victories, won the Cartier Champion two-year-old award, hasn't run yet at 3, obviously. And I think, you know, with the topsy-turvy nature of the three-year-old division, I know we have those big four, I think he could still be the best three-year-old in the world too. So he's going to run in the English 2000 Guineas. Very, very excited to see him, see if he's the same horse or, you know, possibly even better. I know Al's probably got some stuff to say about that, but a couple other group ones, the Coronation at, was it the Coronation, Al? No, that's at Ascot, right?
Coronation is at Ascot, yeah.
There's another group one race though, besides the 2000, 1000 Guineas. That's escaping me.
Yeah, I've got to look at like everything so jumbled and out of order. I've kind of lost track of it, really.
But anyway, so we're gonna have tons of top level talent on the racetrack this weekend, all across the world. And you know, that kind of seemed pretty impossible a month or two ago that we would be able to see that. And it's here it is. It's the first weekend in June, and we're back to seeing a star-studded racing landscape, and it's super exciting. Just wanted to get some quick thoughts from you guys on what you're looking forward to this weekend.
Well, Joe, first of all, I firmly disagree with you. I'd be glad to do a 1 hour podcast just making fun of John the whole time. As a matter of fact, I think we ought to give it a try.
Yeah, a lot of sponsors. There's a lot of sponsorship interest in that kind of show.
Well, I mean, obviously the big picture this weekend revolves around the Santa Anita Derby. You know, lots of great races, but we're still in three-year-old mode. Again, it seems odd to be in three-year-old mode when on the weekend when the Belmont Stakes would be ending the Triple Crown, as I mentioned earlier. A couple things about the Santa Anita Derby. I want to see what Honor AP can do, because this is a horse that people have really been on his bandwagon for a long time. And I think it's time for him to kind of put up or shut up. Now, if he runs a good second to Authentic, is that good enough? Maybe not so, because I think a lot of people have been riding this horse's bandwagon, as I said before, and really think that he's a horse that can make some major noise in the Triple Crown. So I want to see what he can do. Obviously, Authentic, we know what he can do already. And I'm probably the only guy out there that's even going to bring this up, but I wish these horses would come back in the Belmont Stakes. I mean, it's 2 weeks. It's not 2 seconds, 2 days. We're going to talk to Shug McGahey in a little while. Easy Goer ran 5 times in a 9-week period between the Gotham and the Belmont Stakes, ran in the Gotham Wood Memorial, the 3 Triple Crown races. That wasn't 100 years ago. Horses can still do it. I know it's never going to happen, but it's kind of unfortunate that the Santa Anita Derby is tripping over the Belmont a little bit, but we understand why when everybody had to scramble late in the game to put all their dates together and get these races to go.
Yeah, I think that would be a yeoman's ask to run in the Santa Anita Derby and then go cross country within 2 weeks and run in the Belmont. But you're right, Bill, it'd be awesome to see it. And today's modern day athlete is not the same as it was even 30 years ago or 25 years ago when Easygoer was running and had those kind of campaigns. I mean, we're not talking about Man of War, who actually ran in races between the Triple Crown races. But today's modern day athlete, that's really not, you know, that's kind of not what they do. I mean, and I know as an owner, it's tough to get these horses to peak and then let down and then peak again, especially when you have a long transfer, like from one coast to the other. But man, it would be awesome to see these horses campaign and run against each other in Santa Anita and then all fly over to Belmont and to run in the Belmont. And I'm not just saying that because a couple of my horses in my stable, for the contest are California based. But I would, I'd love to see some of these horses run more often because really a lot of the horses that are going to be running in the Santa Anita Derby and some of the preps have only run literally a handful of times. And now you're talking June of their 3-year-old year. So these horses really should be, they should have 6, 7, 8 races under their belt by this time, during a normal, campaign. But obviously that's not going to happen now. We'll just have to wait and see how Santa Anita, Derby plays out and then ultimately see how they start to strategize and pick up points for the Kentucky Derby. That being said, I think you guys talked a lot about already, you took a lot of my talking points about some of the big races going on this week. What's really nice is that we have all these big races across the world to talk about. And it really seems like that now it's picking up steam and we're going to be able to talk about these horses instead of these issues.
And speaking of Code of Honor, I'm curious to see how Shub manages him. We'll ask him in a bit, just to see, pick his brain to see exactly what kind of horse he thinks he is. He could follow in the steps of an honor code and become the sharp miler, but he obviously stays 10 furlongs. So be interesting to see exactly what Code of Honor, how he's campaigned this year. But hey, it's nice to have a big weekend to look forward to.
Hell yeah. And there'll be a lot to talk about after this week as well. I think it's, we were on the runway last week and now we're taking off in terms of racing for the summer. And I think it's really exciting. All systems go now. So we'll break it all down for you next week. Can't believe I talked more Euro than Al did. That's the biggest upset of the podcast. So maybe I'll be the TDN writers room Euro expert when you're not here, Al. I'll be your apprentice for that position.
You're capable, more than capable.
TDN Writers Room is presented by Keeneland. Keeneland will conduct an online select Horses of Racing Age sale on June 23rd in the Keeneland Digital Sales Room. Entries are accepted through June 12th. Learn more at keenelanddigital.com. We also have the summer meet coming up at Keeneland. The Kentucky Horse Racing Commission Race Dates Committee unanimously approved Keeneland's request to conduct a spectator-free 5-day summer meet July 8th through 12th. Going to be action-packed, going to be a total blast. I can't wait for it. It's going to be 9 to 10 races daily and 10 graded stakes races in those 5 days, traditionally run during the spring meet. And it's going to include the bluegrass and the Ashland, usually the centerpieces for 3-year-olds during the meet, during the April spring meet at Keeneland. So super looking forward to that. Like I said, it's just going to be an action packed calendar overall, but we're glad that Keeneland was able to squeeze these 5 days in. And it's going to be the perfect lead in to Saratoga for me. It's going to be nonstop action for probably 2 months, starting with Keeneland. John, I know you're interested in the Horses of Racing Age sale part of it. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, every year we go through the process within our organization of taking some of the horses that still have conditions and that still have some upside potential and entertain the idea of putting them into these Horses of Racing Age sale. And we've done well over the past couple of years. And sometimes it just takes a different stable and a different venue for some of these horses to blossom and do well in another program. This year, we're actually going to enter between 7 and 10 horses into the Keeneland Horses of Racing Age sale with our friends at Hiddenbrook. And we're actually moving all of those racehorses over to Hiddenbrook South. So they're centrally located because our understanding is that the Keeneland sale is going to be virtual, 100% virtual. So the horses aren't going to be on the grounds or anything. So we want to try to make it easier for people to come and look at the horses. The other thing that's interesting about this upcoming sale that really, caused us to enter the horses into the Keeneland sale is that they're not charging any commissions for any horses that are bought back. So if we put a reserve on a horse and it doesn't meet that value, Keeneland's not charging anybody who does that. So it's really kind of a great opportunity to maximize some dollars on some horses, move some horses to other programs, and really have minimal expenses to do so. So I appreciate Keeneland doing it. And like I said, we're going to enter a number of horses into the sale, and the sale's like in 3 weeks. So I'm curious to see how it all works out virtually, but that's ultimately where a lot of these sales are going to have to go, is, you know, at least have some sort of virtual platform for bidding purposes.
Yeah. And, you know, Keeneland has been on the forefront of that. They were one of the first ones to announce that they were going to move to digital bidding, online bidding. So yeah, that's coming up in a couple of weeks. PAC sales calendar, PAC racing calendar. Keeneland will be at the forefront of that for sure. Owning a multiple grade stakes winning racehorse like Hard Not to Love is attainable with a partnership like West Point Thoroughbreds. Partnerships enable you to spread your ownership across several horses for less than it costs to own one horse alone. John, you listening? This increases your racetrack action and chances for a big horse. Check out why West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships at westpointtb.com. Some action last week for West Point Thoroughbreds, at last for all of us. They had a bunch of horses running at Churchill. They had Hard Not to Love, who ran in the Santa Maria, and I thought ran a pretty good race, ran second, beat CC, got the revenge on her from the Beholder Mile, but just couldn't reel in the Bob Baffert upsetter who went wire to wire. So shout out to them for that. Another nice little black tie placing for her as she racks up the earnings. They also had a nice turf maiden winner that I wanted to mention on Sunday in the finale at Churchill, named Cavalry Charge, the Honor Code colt, who had picked up some checks on the dirt, run some pretty sneaky good figures, I would say, on the thoroughgraph scale, and switched to the turf and did something that is not that easy. Stretched out from 6 furlongs on the dirt to 9 furlongs on the turf and won by open lengths. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. So he's an interesting horse going forward, might have a new future on the lawn. So glad to see West Point back in action. Glad to see those silks again. And I think it's only going to get better for them from here. Obviously, Hard Not to Love should have a big summer as well. So shout out to the sponsor, and we're glad to see you guys doing well. So some sad news to report this week. This broke yesterday morning. There were rumors flying all around Twitter, and it was soon confirmed by the people at Judmont that Arrogate had to be euthanized. At this point, an undetermined illness. They said that he had what they thought was a sore neck, and at some point he collapsed in his stall and wasn't able to get back up. Seems like they did everything they could at Haggard to try to diagnose the problem and fix the problem, and then just after 4 days, he still just wasn't getting up. Obviously, a terrible thing. It's terrible when any horse dies, but especially one as young and as full of promise and potential as a stallion as him. He was only 7 years old. I told this story on Twitter yesterday that after I started at TBN, he was the first rising star that I made the call on. I saw him break his maiden at Santa Anita, and I was super impressed. He also had a race before that where he ran third. That was really impressive. So I felt pretty strongly about him. Obviously did not have any inclination or indication that he was going to go on to do everything he did, you know, shatter the track record in the Travers, running 159 and change. Dubai World Cup victory. I mean, that was honestly may have been the best racing performance I have ever seen. I mean, you know, I put Go Sabre up there, but you know, other than him, it's hard to beat that, to break last the way he did in a 14 horse field, loop everybody and win in hand over a horse like Gun Runner, who was second in there, who obviously went on to do tremendous things the rest of the year. Won the Breeders' Cup Classic, was the horse of the year, won the Pegasus after that. It's an out and out monster, and Arrogate dusted him like he was standing still, despite breaking last and having to loop the entire field. Absolutely jaw-dropping performance. And he's right up there. He's right up there in the two or three best horses I've ever seen in my racing life. I think he was going to be a tremendous stallion. And also, he was one of the last remaining sons of Unbridled Song at stud. And I think that was really important too, because he's just, Unbridled Song was a brilliant racehorse and has been a brilliant sire, and has sired fast horses all over the place. He died recently in the last couple of years, and he's left a legacy. And I'm hoping that even with his short time at stud, Arrogate will leave a legacy too, because he does have three crops. His first crop will sell his yearlings this year. If you can buy one, you should buy one, because especially if they're a colt, because you never know, it might be on you to keep the Arrogate tree going. Tragic news. I'll leave it up to you guys. I first of all, just want to give my condolences to everybody at Judmont, everybody that cared for Arrogate. As saddened as we all are, it's going to be exponentially worse for people that actually have their hands on the horse, and he will be missed.
Joe, at the risk of being redundant, I want to also talk about the Dubai World Cup, because you're absolutely right. That was one of the best performances any of us will see in our lifetimes, for all the reasons you just said, with him getting squeezed at the start, dropping back to last, running down Gun Runner, et cetera. So I just want to add to that what you said, what Bob Baffert told me when I called him yesterday, and he too wanted to talk about that race. And the quote I'm paraphrasing was that if Secretariat were alive and well and in that Dubai World Cup, he's not sure he could have beaten Arrogate that day. Now, these are all hypotheticals and that sort of thing, but that tells you the kind of level of respect Baffert has for the horse and also for that particular performance. He's a little bit overshadowed because he comes in between the two Triple Crown winners in American Pharoah and Justify. And you're never going to get a trainer to compare horses like that. But talking to Baffert, I really think he thinks that Arrogate was every bit as good as the two Triple Crown winners. He just had sort of a different kind of career, not running in the Triple Crown races and then making his name, starting with the Travers, that just tremendous four-race run from the Travers to the Breeders' Cup Classic to the Pegasus to the Dubai World Cup. Those are as good a four-race streak as any horse has had in our lifetimes and probably will see in our rest of our lifetimes.
Yeah, and Bill, since you touched on the Pegasus World Cup, which was just, you know, an outstanding event, I'm going to flip back to the Travers that he won, that Joe alluded to before. You know, it was a track record, which was phenomenal. He went wire to wire, beat a very good field of 13 horses in the race, and he was 11-1. So if that goes to show you just the talent in that race where he was 11-1 and just blew them away, especially the last quarter of a mile, it was a seminal moment in my racing history of watching a horse like that. And we do have a breeding side of our organization, and we wanted to breed to him the first 2 years that he was standing at stud and couldn't get a season to him. Ironically enough, we were supposed to breed a filly of ours to him this week. And early on in the week, we started hearing rumors that there may be an issue with him of he wasn't going to be breeding. And then subsequently, we didn't realize it was this bad where it ended up being his demise. But we were that close to breeding one of our mares to what I think is one of the top five racehorses that I've ever seen. And between the Travers and the Pegasus World Cup and the Dubai World Cup, and oh, by the way, don't forget, he also won the Breeders' Cup Classic as a three-year-old. You know, he was just a phenomenal racehorse and phenomenal looking and earned $17.5 million, which I don't know if that number is going to be, you know, eclipsed ever in our lifetime. But just all around, had the breeding, had the looks. Joe, you mentioned Unbridled Song, which, you know, he is quickly coming into his own as far as being a sire of sire and a broodmare sire. That you want. And you mentioned before about try to buy a yearling. I think his weanling average was almost $250,000, you know, for a weanling. So good luck with being able to afford to try to buy a yearling, especially a good looking one of that, you know, of Arrogate's, you know, gene pool. But just an astonishing horse, and equally as astonishing that he's gone just like that. So I highly recommend that if you haven't watched any of those races we mentioned, just watch it on YouTube or watch it online. And even knowing that he's going to win, you'd still be surprised at the way that he does it. It was Secretariat-esque in a couple of those races.
I think too, a tip of the hat to the Judmont brass. And Judmont is known the world over for campaigning turf horses like Frankel and Enable. And they came up with a plan. They hatched a plan to buy American classic bred dirt horses. And they tasked Bob Baffert and Dinan Alani with finding them the right horse to win those types of races in America. And, you know, the success is overwhelming. As great as the World Cup was, and I agree with all of you, it was jaw-dropping and miraculous. To run down California Chrome as a three-year-old, spotting him loads of experience, and to chase him around there, to grab him at the eighth ball and say, okay, this is my race. I mean, that showed just what sort of tenacity he had. And So he'll go down as one of the greats. And in terms of the book of mares that he bred Songbird, Judmont bought Paul a silver mining privately to breed to him. They did that with several grade one winners. So the quality of stock in his book of mares, he'll have three crops. It'll be something to watch in a few years when they get the track. His first yearlings would be sold this year. So let's see what happens. But yeah, condolences to Judmont, to Garrett O'Rourke, and Donald Erskine, Prince College, and tremendous loss.
Just a couple of things I wanted to add on there. It still hurts my heart that I didn't crush him at 11-1 in the Travers after I made that whole spiel about him being my first rising star. I remember what happened. He drew the rail, and he had a little tendency in his first couple of races to break a half step slowly. And I was a little bit worried that he would get squeezed like that. It reminded me so much of my other favorite horse, Ghost Zapper, in the Breeders' Cup Classic, because he had never gone to the lead before. And he drew the rail, and they were like, screw it, we're just going to put the best horse on the lead. So I remember joking to Brian after he drew the rail on the Travers, I was like, well, I guess he's just going to have to do a Ghost Zapper now. And he did even more than that, you know, and he just... 159.36 was the time. 13 and a half lengths was the margin of victory. 122 Beyer, which is just freakish and unheard of these days in racing. Ran a 120. Al mentioned him running down California Chrome, pretty a loose California Chrome in the stretch of the Breeders' Cup Classic. Got a 120 there. Incredible performance. Got a 119 in the Pegasus World Cup. And I think someone can check me on this, but I wonder if there's a horse who beat back-to-back horses of the year in, it wasn't consecutive races because he had the Pegasus in the middle, but in two out of three races, he beat horses of the year in California Chrome in 2016 and then Gun Runner two starts later in the Dubai World Cup and never won a horse of the year trophy on his own because he had those two big races as a three-year-old and as a four-year-old. I think, you know, the boom came off the rose a little bit for some people when he came back from Dubai and didn't win after that. He was off the board in the San Diego at 1-20. He was good, I thought, in the Pacific Classic, was just beaten a half length by Collective. He was really talented, stablemate of his. And then he just didn't fire at all in the Breeders' Cup. And people said he wasn't the same horse. I just wonder, all three of those races were at Del Mar. And I just would have loved to see him be able to run somewhere else at least once after Dubai to see if he was still that same horse, because I get this sneaking suspicion that he wasn't a huge fan of the Del Mar track because he had an allowance win the previous year at Del Mar that really did not foretell that what he was going to do in the Travers. It was a very workmanlike victory. So I would have liked to see him run somewhere else. That's a digression. It's interesting that he beat two horses of the year in three starts and never won that trophy himself, but phenomenal, phenomenal race horse, once in a generation talent. And, we really hope to see his progeny on the track succeed and then create successful progeny of their own so he can have like a little sire tree in his only his 3 years at stud. So we'll miss you, big guy. Condolences to everybody that ever laid hands on him. He did a great job. And we look forward to seeing his babies on the track. Joining the West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. So this week we're going to do something different, and it's going to go on through the rest of the three-year-old season, including the Triple Crown races. Shout out to Brian DiDonato for this idea. So we're going to do basically a three-year-old fantasy draft, and it's going to be all five of us who are on the show regularly, and we're going to pick four horses each, so it's 20 horses total, and we're going to tally up the points that those horses earn in the prep races and the Triple Crown races the rest of the way. The winner gets bragging rights, and maybe we'll do a charitable donation at the end. We're still kind of sorting that out. So we're going to do Right now, we're going to do the draft. We're going to do a snake draft. So we're going to have reverse the order after each round. Each panelist, like I said, drafts a four-horse stable. And each panelist is required to draft at least one horse who currently has zero Kentucky Derby points. So we're going to try to go outside the box with at least one of our picks. And they're going to earn points. And then we'll see who's on top at the end, who's got the bragging rights, similar to the Triple Crown throwdown that we have in the TDN with Brian and Steve Chirac and Ed DeRosa. but this is cooler because you can actually see our faces. So let's start it right now. I got the number one pick. The order is me, then John. We had a trade. We actually had a pre-draft trade between John and Brian. Brian had gotten the second pick, and he and John traded. So right now the order is me, then John, then Bill, then Al, and then Brian. And then we're going to reverse that order for the second round and then reverse back and so forth. All right, so once again, all of the points that these horses earn throughout the prep season are going to go to our individual stables. We're going to start it off this week with the Santa Anita Derby, which is 100 points to first place, 40 to second place, 20 to third, and 10 to fourth place. Then after that, 2 weeks later, is the Belmont. You can see the rest of the schedule. The only one that's still to be determined is the Travers, because we don't have a date for that. We don't know the points distributions either, but it culminates with the Derby September 5th, which is 300 points. So we're going to make that double the top points distribution of the other races. So 300 for first, 120 for second, 60 for third, and 30 for fourth. And then the last race will be the Preakness October 3rd, which is going to be 150, 60, 30, and 15. So that's the way it's going to shake out. There's going to be some lower points races, some really big points races, and you're going to be really rewarded if your horse runs well in the Triple Crown races. So looking forward to getting it started on Saturday. So I'm going to go first. And I went back and forth between two horses for the first pick. I went back and forth between Tis the Law and Charlatan, because I feel like those are the two most talented horses, you know, pound for pound in the country. I'm going to end up going with Tis the Law for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think he's more likely to run in all four of the Quadruple Crown races. He might show up at the Belmont, the Travers, the Derby, and the Preakness Barkley Tag. He's talked about doing that. I like how versatile he is. He can press the pace or he can come from off the pace. Charlatan, as brilliant as he is, has only done it on the lead so far, so you never know what's going to happen if he gets hooked and cooked. So, and also, Charlatan already has his breeding rights sold, so that's another factor. They might be a little bit quicker to retire him than Tis the Law, and Tis the Law is a New York bred, so that was the tipping point for me. So Tis the Law, number one overall. John?
Very interesting. I was also going back and forth between two horses. And before I announce those two horses, just so everyone at home understands the trade, Brian and I traded. I traded the fifth pick overall. Brian got the second pick overall. And Brian gets a horse to be named later. So Brian literally will be able to name a horse of ours at another future time. So Brian, start working on those names, okay? So I went back and forth between Tis the Law, and who has now been picked as the number one pick overall, and Maxfield. And I'm going to obviously select Maxfield, basically because, you know, I was really impressed with his race last time out off a huge layoff. He's already won a grade one, and, you know, he's undefeated. On top of that, he's won twice at Churchill Downs. So if the big points in our system is really predicated around the Kentucky Derby, here's a horse that's already run over the surface twice and won on the surface twice. And quite frankly, it was a coin toss between Maxfield and Tis the Law. So, Joe, you made it very easy for me, and I'm inheriting Maxfield, and I couldn't be happier.
My turn at number three. First of all, the contest is over. Joe is going to win because Tis the Law. John, that was a no-brainer. You know, just like he said, he's a very good horse. He's going to run in everything, or it looks like some of these other horses are going to have their races spread out. So we're talking now with the defection of Nadal because of the injury, the so-called Big Four. And what's left among the Big Four are Charlatan and Authentic. And I could toss a coin, really, and take either one, but I will take Charlatan because it looks like he is going to run in the Belmont and Authentic is not. And, of course, the points are more for the Belmont than they are for the Santa Anita Derby. So I want to strike while the iron is hot. Hopefully I'll get Charlatan to win a big point race in the Belmont. So the Bill Finley Stables, with the third pick in this year's 2020 fantasy draft, will take Charlatan.
All right. So I handicapped this wrong in trying to guess what you guys would go with. So that leaves me with the last of the Big Four, or it leaves me with 4B. But I'm going to go with Authentic. Runs this weekend, should be favored and tough to beat in the Santa Anita Derby. And then let's see what happens from there. He's not ideal for me. I think he's still got some learning to do, but by the same token, if he continues to improve, who knows what his upside is. So I still have a few questions of exactly how far he wants to go and he needs to get things right in his head, needs to develop some mentally. But at number four, I'll set with Authentic.
All right, so I've got two picks now. For the first one, I'm kind of between the two, Honor Codes, Honor AP, and Max Player. I guess I'll go to Honor AP. I'm a little worried that he's not going to run in a bunch of races, but I mean, it seems like he's got a good shot this weekend, and I think he's a true classic distance horse. So that'll be my first pick. My second pick, I'm going to probably go a little early for taking my no points horse and take Todd Pletcher trainee Dr. Post.
Damn,
oh, no.
Oh, man.
He's the absolute sleeper of this thing. He's like a really well-bred quality road, expensive horse, all that. He's run a big figure at least once, won a stakes last time at Gulfstream with some trouble. And I watched his workout the other day on XBTV and he dusted Gouverneur Morris. So I think he's, you know, there's a lot of value there, especially since he seems like way the best horse with no points. So that's why I traded down.
Brian, I got to hand it to you because personally, we looked at him as a yearling and got way outbid. I mean, he sold for about $400,000 on the first day of the September sale and loved him at the time and was so happy to see that he was, you know, making his return and won the Unbridled so easily. He was actually going to be my next pick. So kudos to you. I mean, not that I know anything, but that was a really nice pick.
I'm probably in trouble. Everyone liked the horse. I might be in trouble. We'll see. I don't know exactly is he going? I don't even know where he's going, but he just seems like pretty.
He's running a new horse. I think that's the plan. I think so.
Okay. Cool.
All right. I'm happy that this guy's still available. I'm going to go with King Guillermo at number seven. He's a horse that's proven that he classes up with this group. He doesn't need to take his racetrack with him. He's run well. Tampa ran well at Oaklawn last time. I think he's a horse with tremendous upside. He should continue to improve as the distances get longer. And I think he's a bit of a sleeper at number seven. So King Guillermo for me.
All right. I will also be a little bit of a wise guy here and take my no point horse. And I like the strategy of Brian to take these horses early so that you have a horse that has some chance of picking up points rather than maybe taking them at the end of the draft. So I don't even know how to pronounce this. Rushi or Rushi going in the Santa Anita Derby this weekend. R-U-S-H-I-E.
Yep.
Anybody got a pronunciation for me?
Probably wrong, but Rushy. We'll go with Rushy.
Rushy is me. Bill Finley takes in the second round of the fantasy draft, Santa Anita Derby starter Rushy.
Salmon Rushy, right? The guy that
wrote the program. Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I know John's scrambling now because he wanted to.
That comes back to me. I know two of my no pointers are off the board. I thought I was going to be really slick and come up with a couple of no pointers that you guys hadn't even heard of. But all right, well, I'm going to go with the best talent on the board because like my New York Giants, sometimes you can't just reach for, you know, for a position. You got to go with who you think is the best player on the board. And I'm going to go with one of the two Biancone horses, Sovolante. That's who I'm going with my second pick in the draft.
Want to get any explanation or anything you want to give the viewers?
Just because I couldn't pronounce Rushy, number one. I think that as the races get longer, he'll love the rat of ground. He's got really good dirt figures. They started him on the turf first time out, and even though he won both those, his numbers on the dirt just continue to improve. I don't know between the two of them who they really feel is the better horse. It's Andean or Solo Volante. You know, just his running style of coming from off the pace with all these speed horses in these preps. I feel like that he's, you know, got a little bit of a better chance. I'm trying to play an angle of picking a horse that picking two horses with Maxfield that come from off the pace because there's just so much speed out of this group of 3-year-olds right now.
Yeah, that was one of the horses I was bandying about for this pick as well. I'm going with the top overall talent, BPA, as they say in the NFL draft, best player available. So I'm going to take Wells Bayou here. You know, obviously the winner of the Louisiana Derby, but I thought even before that in the Southwest, he ran a really great race on the lead on a fast pace and just got run down by Silver Prospector, who had a great trip. I know he's passing on the Belmont, but he's probably going to run in either the Bluegrass or the Indiana Derby. Hopefully one or two more races like that before the Kentucky Derby I worry a little bit, like John said, that there's so much speed in these prep races and these Kentucky Derby, these Triple Crown races, so he might get fried on the front end. But overall, I think of the horses remaining, he's got the most talent, so I'm going to take Wells Bayou at number 10. And at number 11, I'm going to go a little bit out of the box here just because I want a closer. I want like a deep closer, like John said, like Soli Volante. This horse, he kind of needs everything to go his own way, but I think he's also the kind of horse who is going to run a lot and is going to clunk up and get a lot of checks, if not win these races. So I'm going to go with Enforceable from the Mark Cassie barn and John Oxley. I just think he's the kind of horse who's always going to get a piece if he doesn't win, and it'll be a relatively easy way to stack up some points. So I'm going to go Wells Bayou number 10 and then Enforceable number 11. Back to John.
And Joe, just so you know, I actually spoke to Mark Cassie this morning about this horse in particular. And he said that like most Tappets, you know, mentally this horse is just starting to put it together. So he was on my list of potentials as well, but Mark still feels like he's high on the horse, and he feels like that the horse, the light's gone on finally. I think that's a good pick, because those Tappets are sometimes a little slow to develop mentally. That being said, wow. So a lot of the horses that, I mean, you guys are right in line with what I had on as far as the hierarchy of this group goes. All right. Well, then I'm going to go with my no point horse right now. And it's from the barn of Brett Calhoun, Mr. Big News. Again, I think this horse is just starting to develop. He's a Giant's Causeway out of a Galileo mare, which, Alan, you'll concur is distance, distance, distance. And the longer, the better. He's improving every race. He's not there yet. He's not as good as the big four or big five. But I like his running style, and I think that he's a value pick here in the third round.
Are they running these races on the turf this year, John?
At this point, I'm scrambling, Alan. I'm scrambling for whatever I can get. I'm hoping for rain. Praying for rain.
He was on my short list as well for no pointer. So.
Yep.
Bill, you're up, man.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm losing track of the order. Well, this is a no-brainer. And John, thank you for passing on horse that was an obvious pick rather than your wise guy sleeper, Ette Indian. The other being Cone, the 2020 Haskell winner, Ette Indian joins my stable.
That's the prediction, the Haskell winner, huh?
Yeah.
Nice.
That's where he's headed.
Very nice.
All right. So I was looking for an Asmussen, really, because there seems to be every year an Asmussen that goes and wins Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, and things like that. I couldn't find it. So I'm replacing Asmussen with Dale Roman. So I'm going to take Attachment Rate. It's a bit of an outsider. Like Joe said, the horse that could accumulate some points by maybe running in these lesser races. Whether he's Triple Crown caliber, I guess, remains to be seen. But I think he's run some sneaky good races. I thought his race against Maxfield last time was better than it probably looks on paper. So a bit of a outside the box pick, but Attachment Rate for me.
Man, when you said Asmussen, I got worried for a second that my next pick wasn't going to be available, but I'll take Pneumatic. I thought he ran really well in the mat win. A lot of upside. I thought he was on the wrong part of the track. I'm happy I can get him this far down, so I'll take him. And then to finish off my picks, another one I'm kind of shocked is still available. Max Player running in the Belmont has a lot of upside. Kind of green still in his previous races, and he hasn't run for a while, obviously, with everything going on. But I think he's pretty legit, and that'll round out my four.
Brian, Brian, let me just say, you know, Pneumatic actually isn't Triple Crown nominated.
He is now.
He is now?
Yeah.
He can still pay.
I mean, okay. I
know if this contest is close, I'll pay it.
I know as of May 30th, he wasn't.
Yeah, but he can still win the preps, though. So
he can still win the preps. Yeah, he can still get the points.
He's in now, right?
He's in as of, the late closing is today. And he's in there, yeah. As is King Guillermo. All right. I was between two horses for my no points. I'm going to opt against Shooter Shoot, who ran very well and has some interesting form lines going back. won his last at Oaklawn, and he's going to run this weekend. But I'm going to pin my hopes on TDN Rising Star Mystic Guide. He was scratched from the rail. Give me fist bump, Joe Fist. you know, he was drawn the rail in the mat win. They chose to scratch. He's now at Fair Hill with Team Stidham. Had a good work the other day.
I think he's entered tomorrow, Al.
Is he?
Yeah, he's in an allowance. He and another sleeper are both in an allowance tomorrow, Belmont. So
okay. I'm going to stick with him and hope that he'll use that as a springboard to, you know, something like the Haskell or something like that going forward. Mystic Guide for me. Sorry, Joe.
All right. Well, I'm looking at a horse that I hope goes the Ohio Derby type route, because I don't think he's good enough to really compete in the Triple Crown races or to pick up many points. So I'll go with our friend Safi Joseph and NY Traffic. And again, hoping that that's a horse that can get kind of cheap points in lesser preps. And, you know, good enough horse that I'm a little bit surprised that he's still available as well. So NY Traffic for me.
That's a good pick. That's a good pick. Value pick, as it were, Bill. Because he's been improving every race, you know, as a three-year-old. And you got to root for Cassius King and LC Racing. They're good friends of mine and good friends of the show and good people. So we'll, plus it's across traffic. And we personally
have tell them I said look at the Iowa and Ohio Derbies of the world.
I will definitely make sure that they listen. Exactly, they listen to that. This is really interesting because I actually had three horses that were all kind of on a flat foot tie. You just took one of them. And now I got to choose between Basin and Modernist. And I'm going to go with Modernist strictly because he had a terrible post in the Louisiana Derby. He was number 14 of 14 and just was four or five wide the entire race and never really got into gear. But I think he's improving. He's certainly not as good as any of the other horses that we had, you know, in the first couple of rounds for sure. But I have to have faith in Bill Mott and Uncle Mo out of a Bernardini mare. Just screams long and dirt. And hopefully he'll, you know, step up in one of these preps and then get in through the back door into the Derby. So I will go with Modernist.
I think he would love a 12 furlong Belmont this year, that horse.
He definitely would. It's unfortunate that that's not the case this year. But we'll see. At this point, it's the last round. It's almost Mr. Irrelevant. So I want to draft, you know, for value. We'll go with the Y Gods and Bill Mott on that one. Modernist with my last pick.
All right. So this was a horse that you guys all took my 0 points horses. So I'm scrambling a little bit, but this is a horse that I mentioned last week on the podcast. He ran on, hold on 1 second. Never mind. She's a filly.
Oh, the Gary Moore West horse?
No, it was like the Cliffs Ice horse that I talked about last week.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been fun.
So
I'm actually surprised that, I mean, these aren't going to help you, Joe, so you don't have to listen, but I'm surprised that Farmington Road and Basin and Storm the Court, last year's you know, Juvenile Breeders' Cup winner, are still on the board. I guess we only have it with Brian. The idea of having a no point pick was huge because there's some really good horses that are still kind of on the AE. Yeah.
So for my last pick, I almost picked a filly, but instead I'm gonna go a little out of the box here. The Unbridled Stakes was a stake that they added at Gulfstream in April, and the top two horses from there were picked. Dr. Post and Attachment Raid by Brian and Al, respectively. I'm going to go with the Pace Setter in there. He was third, horse named Americanus for Mark Hennig and Cortland Farms. Had a good looking allowance win at Gulfstream before that and set a fast pace in the Unbridled and just, you know, gave it up a little bit late, finished third, but was only beaten 2 3/4 lengths by Dr. Post. I think this is a horse who will get better with distance going forwards by Warfront. Not ideal. Brian stole everybody's 0 points horse, and a couple other ones got snagged before me. So I'm going to take Americanus from the Mark Hennig barn. Last pick of the 2020 TDN Writers Room Fantasy 3-Year-Old Draft. And we will now put a big graphic up that shows you everybody's stable. all 20 horses. Should be a lot of fun. It should add a lot of intrigue to this. You know, I said this back in like December or January, when I was like, man, it's going to get really tiresome talking about these three-year-olds every single week. And now here we are in June, and we still haven't had any Triple Crown races yet. So this will add a lot of spice to it, add a little diversity to it, give us a rooting interest. So best of luck to all you guys. Thanks for participating, and thanks to Brian for the idea. And we look forward to it. We're gonna check in on this every week that there's a three-year-old prep. Obviously, this week we start with the Santa Anita Derby, so there'll be something to talk about next Wednesday in terms of our stables. So best of luck to all. Let's get it on. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. For more information on how they can help you, visit www.greenco.com. This week's Green Group Guest of the Week is Hall of Famer, man who needs no introduction, and complete stranger to our producer, Patty Wolf, Shug McGahee. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Sure. So we'll start with this. The big news, obviously, this week, Code of Honor making his return in the Westchester, had a tremendous three-year-old season, finished second somewhat controversially in the three-year-old championship race. We'll get your thoughts on that, too. I wanted to know how you've seen him develop over the winter and how that might inform the way you campaign him this year.
Well, you know, he's had a little bit longer vacation than I expected. I thought that the Westchester would be opening day at Belmont, and obviously there wasn't any opening day at Belmont till now. But I don't think it's hurt anything. He had a really good winter. We gave him off till the 1st of February and put him back in training, and he's an athletic type of horse, so it doesn't take a whole lot to kind of get him ready. And, you know, I think he's ready. He's got he had a good winter at Payson Park. His two works here at Belmont have been just as good as I could expect. And, you know, we're looking forward to running him on Saturday.
Shug, hi, it's Bill Finley, and thanks for joining us. And just to piggyback on what Joe said, I wanted to see if you had laid out any sort of schedule for him. I would imagine you're looking at the Breeders' Cup Classic, but how do you go from the Westchester to the Breeders' Cup Classic? Do you look at the Jockey Club Gold Cup again? Just generally, what are some of your goals for 2020 with this horse?
Well, you will run. I mean, the Metropolitan could be on the map. The Whitney could really be on the map. Woodward or Jockey Club Gold Cup, I mean, you know, who knows how they're going to have those things scheduled. But, you know, we'd definitely like to get to the, you know, we were good, but we were still going along. We'd definitely like to get to the Breeders' Cup Classic, especially with it being at Keeneland. You know, it would have a special meaning for Mr. Farish and, you know, basically for myself, too. But, you know, we'll sort of let him tell us like we did last year and bring him along as he sees pleased. And you know, hopefully we can running after the Westchester, we can be participants in the big races we go on the rest of the year.
Chug, it's Jonathan Green. Thank you again for being on the show. You know, we've been following your career for years and just been very impressed. Obviously, you're a Hall of Famer, and you've managed and campaigned a number of Hall of Fame horses. When we didn't have as much racing going on in April, one of the pieces that we did here was to name our favorite horse. And ironically enough, two out of the four of us picked horses of yours. Bill actually has had Easy Goer as his favorite all-time horse. And I have Personal Ensign as my favorite horse of all time. Can you give us some background or maybe a funny anecdote about either of those two horses when you were campaigning those Hall of Famers?
Well, I think with Bill and Easy Goer, it was a heartbreaking year for him. But for Bill, he was a terrific fan of Easy Goer's and, you know, and appropriately so. And, you know, I was glad he was. I mean, we go back a long way. You know, I think that everything went great. You know, we got to Louisville for the Derby, and, you know, we kind of caught the same sort of track that we did at in the Breeders' Cup two-year-old, and I don't think he particularly cherished that. And we finished second to a very good horse. And then we got to the Preakness, and, you know, I was kind of, you know, is he as good as Sunday Silence or not? And I mean, even though I was disappointed, got beat a nose, you know, I knew then we were in the ball game. And then when we got back here, he just thrived when he got back to Belmont. and then ran a huge race. And going through the rest of them, the Whitney was good, the Travers was good, the Woodward was good, the Gold Cup was good. And when they drew for the Breeders' Cup Classic, when they had the little press conference after the draw, Mr. Whittingham said, "I think I got the best of the Shug on the draw." He drew the outside, I drew the inside. And we watched the replay of the race. We kind of ducked to the inside, leaving there, and he got the jump on us. And, you know, then I remember McCarron telling me, said, "We were going down the backside. I heard somebody coming," and I didn't have to look over my shoulder. I knew who it was. So then he went and opened up on us. We weren't able to catch him. And so that was sort of that. And with, you know, personal insight, it was, you know, I mean, she ran a great race as a two-year-old when she won her maiden race. And then she came back and won the Frisette. You know, we're on our way to the Breeders' Cup, and the Breeders are here to go out there, and she breathes terrific, and but came back bad and cracked the pastern and, you know, put five screws in it. Dr. Bramlage did, and, you know, I thought that was, then I went on to California, had, you know, to the Breeders' Cup with Polish TV, and, you know, I thought, you know, we were just trying to save her life and make a broodmare out of her. And, you know, surgery wasn't quite as sophisticated then as it is now, even though they had come a long way. And, you know, I got back here and they operated on over at Dr. Reed's hospital. And he came, stopped and said, "You know, that filly's going to be fine." And I said, "What do you mean it's going to be fine?" And she was back in the barn then. And so I quickly got on the phone to Dr. Bramlage, and he said, "Well, she might hurt something else, but she ain't gonna hurt that one. So that ain't gonna be the problem." And then she went on and had just an unbelievable, 3-year-old year. And we elected not to go to the Breeders' Cup because that was the year they ran at Hollywood Park, like the 20th or 21st of November, and brought her back. So we just gave her some time off, and then brought her back in the spring, and, you know, she won the Shuvie, and what's now Ogden Phipps was the Hempstead then, and there was some chatter, well, she just wins at Belmont, so I took her down to Monmouth, and she won the Molly Pitcher pretty easy there. And then Mr. Phipps was kind of anxious to see what she did against the colt, so I said, "Well, let's give her a whirl on the Whitney," and she was able to beat Gulch and King Swan in there, and then came back, and you know, she won the Beldame. She won the Masquette, beating Winning Colors in there. And then she won the Beldame easy. And then we got to Louisville, and, you know, I thought everything was on go, and kind of called for any racetrack, whether she liked it or not, I don't know. But, you know, it looked like all the way around there that nothing was going to happen. And then finally she kicked in and was able to beat Winning Colors a nose. And Goodbye Halo, who won the Oaks, was third. And Randy came back and said, looked at me and said, "Never in doubt." I said, "Well, I'm glad I felt that way, because I sure didn't." But it was a lot of fun having her. I have both horses, and, you know, they're both kind of career makers for anybody, and they sure were for me.
Hi, Shug. It's Alan Carrasso, and I'm going to ask you a question about a lesser known of your 4-year-olds, whose female family actually includes Person Lenson and her daughter, My Flag. But could you talk a little bit about Performer, who's, I know he's on the comeback trail, he's had a couple of breezes before he's coming back. Not many of yours go favored first asking, but he was, ran a credible race, and really nobody's gotten near him since. But can you give us an update on Performer?
Well, he's entered in a Carter on Saturday. I think he's had a really good winter. You know, he's another one that was on go and was coming up here running the Carter on Wood Memorial Day, which I think was the 4th of April. So he's been on hold for 2 months too. And then when we didn't get to run, you know, I kind of backed off of him a little bit. And then I was just sort of trying to think in my head that to get him ready again, when the Carter might be. And, you know, they kept telling us that maybe we were going to run on the 22nd, maybe the 29th, and then end up being on, you know, we start today. And his race is on June the 6th. So he had a very, very good winter in Payson Park, and he's come back up here. And his couple of works here have been really on go. And, you know, then again, I'm I'm glad to get him back to the races. And, you know, we're in the Carter to win, but we'd like to just get a good solid race into him to move him on for the rest of the year. But he's gotten bigger and stronger. And I think his races in the three-year-old year were, you know, kind of established him to where he is today, and, you know, made him sort of grow up and learn about what it's all about. And, you know, I think that he'll make a credible performance Saturday.
Shug, it's Joe again. Al kind of stole my thunder. I wanted to ask about Performer, but I'll go to my next question. That, you know, Belmont opening up, I think, is a big, big seminal moment for racing in this coronavirus era. I grew up going to Belmont, and it's a huge deal to see it back running again. I think of you as a Belmont guy. Obviously, you stable at Payson in the winter, but think of you as a guy who's based out of Belmont. Can you just talk a little bit about the significance of getting Belmont to running again after what we've gone through the last couple of months in New York?
Well, you are right about that. I'm a Belmont guy. I'd rather train here than anywhere. And I love the races here. You know, I mean, we're going to get started, and, you know, the racing throughout the summer and next fall is going to be great. And I think for New York and for, you know, us as racing people and, you know, in the sports world, getting Belmont going is going to be a big addition. You know, this is kind of the first big sporting event that's opened up here. And, you know, I'm excited about it. Been excited about whenever they're going to get it open. Was kind of getting a little flustered that we weren't getting open, but we're here now. We're going to get started, and you know, all systems will go. It's going to be, you know, a little bit funny because, you know, we're getting kind of, you know, almost a 2 month late start, a month and a half. And so it's going to be a short season, but, you know, I think they've done an incredible job of writing the condition book and trying to give everybody a chance to run. I think some of the races that they overfill will probably, you know, they'll come back with to where you'll get a chance to run. But I think it is an exciting time, and I think today will be an exciting day getting started with the TV coverage that we're going to have. And, you know, even though there's no people here, I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on Belmont Park this afternoon, and rightfully so.
Chuck, Bill Finley, I want to unfortunately bring up a messy subject, but I think it's necessary to talk to you about it because of your status in the industry. And also by the way that you have throughout your career have obviously played by the rules. And we spoke earlier about the three-year-old championship last year. It was won by a horse, Maximum Security, who now is front and center in one of the biggest scandals in horse racing history. You don't need me to fill in the blanks, but I would just like Shogun Gehi's take on the indictments of those trainers. And again, what it's like, I don't know if Service or Navarro ever beat you in any races. They probably did as many horses as they ran. But what it is like for somebody like yourself, who, again, tries to do everything right and sometimes would get beat by people who look for an illegal edge.
Well, of course, Bill, it's a disappointment. And like I said, we have talked about it before. And, you know, I would like that if it ever could be for the game be on a level playing field where everybody had the same chance. I mean, you know, years back when I first started, we were around here with Woody and Wayne and, you know, some of the other great trainers that lived around there. It was fun. I didn't mind competing against them, but some of these guys today, you know, you almost say they're in the race. I don't really want to run against them. Navarro never was a big problem with me, but Service was, because I never did really run against Navarro that much, but, you know, Service was. And, you know, I had a hard time with a 60 horse and brakes was made for 16,000 winning the Kentucky Derby and Florida Derby and all that he did. You know, whether anything was going on or not with him, I you know, how do I know? But I know, well, I read every sentence of all those indictments when they got indicted on all the people. And, you know, it's pretty disappointing. And it's disappointing when, you know, I look and read where, you know, veterinarians are doing what they're doing when, you know, most of the time, you know, they've got an education, and when they graduate from, you know, they're sworn to uphold their doctor's commitment. And, you know, they're doing things to cheat. You know, I think that they know better, and they should, you know, they shouldn't be doing. So I'm hoping that, you know, in the long run, that, you know, whether it's the Horse Racing Integrity Bill and WADA or whoever it's going to be, that you know, we can get a hold on this thing, and you know, that everybody feels like when they go over there that they've got, you know, an equal chance to everybody else, or at least close to an equal chance. And that's really about all I think we can ask for.
And Chuck, John Green again, one of the other topics that's relatively, you know, in the news and controversial has to do with the Jockey Club imposing a 140 mare limit onto these stallions. Now, most of the horses that you train are homebreds, and most of them come from Claiborne, which pretty much already adheres to kind of a soft cap of 125 to 140 mares to their more popular stallions. How do you think this is going to affect racing going forward with the Jockey Club's you know, new cap of 140 mares going to stallions?
Well, Jonathan, I'm not opposed to it. I mean, I came around in the time when they bred them to 40 mares, you know, I mean, and Claiborne, like you say, my teeth are more into Claiborne than anywhere because I've been around them so long with the, you know, with most of the horses that I get have been bred, you know, been bred and raised on that farm, and a lot of them by Claiborne stallions. And so I don't think it'll hurt anything, and I think it'll probably help the longevity of the stallion a little bit. I mean, when you see that, you know, they're going over there and getting bred to 200 or 220 mares, and, you know, I mean, how many times are they going to get bred? Because we all know they don't all get foaled first time you breed them. So, you know, there's comebacks too. So how many times they get bred, you know, is going to be a lot more than what says, you know, that we bred 220 mares. Well, they might have bred, you know, some of those mares 2, 3, 4 times, to, you know, hoping to get them in foal. And then, you know, a lot of them are, you know, shipping in the Southern Hemisphere too. So I think that probably in the longevity of the stallion will probably help. And, you know, I know some people are going to have some qualms with it. They think that, well, you're going to have more of a, you're going to have a lot better chance if you, breed your stallion to more mares to get a decent horse, but maybe in the long run that doesn't have to be true, you know, that sometimes less is more.
It's Alan again. I'm Chicago born and raised, grew up about 10 minutes from Arlington Park. I wanted to take you back to 1993 and the rivalry between Lure and Star of Cozine that was played out in the Manhattan and then in the Caesars. Star of Cozine got the better of you both times. And then you had a date planned for the Arlington Million at the end of August, but Lure was forced to miss that because the ground went completely against you. What kind of performance, looking back, if you can do that, you know, what kind of performance would the fans have been treated to that day had you been able to run?
Well, I think, he was a very good horse. He was very fast, but he wanted it firm. I mean, Star Cozine was very good. When he beat us here, it had a little bit of cut in the ground and maybe we, you know, weren't as good as he was over that type of ground. Then when we went down to Atlantic City, I remember sitting in the box with Mr. Levy and he said, everything ought to be good. So we walked, you know, then we had a little thunderstorm too, but, so he wasn't quite as good as Star Cozine on that type of a track, but that was kind of a weird situation at Arlington. I remember, you know, they tell me when I was flying over there that it was going to rain, and when I landed at O'Hare in a plane, you know, it looked like it was landing in a lake. So I knew then that, you know, this wasn't going to happen. So when I got there, they had some kind of a EVA or something going on there, and we were in a tent. That thing had water in it. You know, I got there and Dale Hancock happened to be sitting there on a bucket. And she said, what are we going to do? And I said, we're going to scratch. It's not that easy to scratch in a $1 million race when you're 8-5 in the program, but, it was the best thing for the horse. But, you know, it was a race that I would, if everything had been right, I would sure love to have been able to run it.
Any other questions for Chuck, guys?
I'm good.
All right, Chuck, thank you so much for the time. Best of luck this meet, and best of luck with Code of Honor. We're looking forward to seeing him.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to running. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Bye.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As The Green Group Guest of the Week, Shug McGahee will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. To learn more about how they can help you, visit www.greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
The Green Group is widely recognized as the top-rated tax and accounting firm specializing in the horse business. Why do the top owners, breeders, pinhookers, and trainers trust The Green Group as their tax advisors? The difference is experience. Firm founder Len Green has over four decades of experience owning, breeding, and racing horses. First-hand knowledge gives Green Group clients proven tax and money-saving strategies. Visit The Green Group at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. Remember, Keeneland will conduct an online Select Horses of Racing Age sale starring John Green on June 23rd in the Keeneland Digital Sales Ring. Entries are accepted through June 12th. Learn more at KeenelandSelect.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, Alan Carrasso, Brian DiDonato, our Green Group Guest of the Week, Shug McGahee, our producer, Patty Wolf, our editor is Danny Siper and Anthony LaRocca, and our production coordinator, Michelle Sobrino. Thanks so much for tuning in. Stay safe out there, especially now. We'll see you next week.